Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into the podcast. I just want to take a moment to mention the podcast sponsor, retrogamestore.com.au. Head over there for all your Game Boy refurbish and repair needs. Screens, shells, buttons, all the bits and pieces. And there's a complete custom build made to order service as well. Also, plenty more retro gaming goodness like video cables, display stand and power supplies, controllers, etc. And you can add the code PixelPie at checkout to get 10% off your order. Also, take a moment to say if you enjoyed this episode and haven't already, give it a subscribe or follow and a review where you can. And maybe you want to recommend the Pixel Pie podcast to anyone you know that would enjoy it. That'd be really appreciated. So thanks for listening. And now let's get on with the show.
Hi, this is Jared from Primetime Funk Mods, and you're listening to the Pixel Pie podcast.
Hey, Jared Funk. Mate, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you very much for asking that. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. I am really good. For just to put people into perspective and time and space and everything, it's like a Sunday arvo for me here, and it's a Saturday evening for you around sort of 8:39 p.m. So you've explained that you've thrown yourself down into the dungeon. You've turned the furnace off. I appreciate you making the sacrifices so we can have this conversation. what's it like down there without the furnace? Is it cold or?
No, it's actually quite seasonal right now. We just got out of fourth winter, and then we had 2 days of solid rain, and then the sun finally came out right as I was leaving work today. So, I got home and watched the kids play with the neighbors for a little while, and then got them in the bath and got down here. So
whereabouts do you live?
Perfectly fine down here. I live in a city called Saskatoon in the province of Saskatchewan in Canada.
Yeah, cool. Saskatchewan. It's one of those names of a place that you think is possibly made up, like Nantucket, and you know, that's just a name someone made up just to write a poem. But no, Saskatchewan.
Yeah, the limericks came first, and then people decided to actually name something Nantucket later.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is Saskatchewan for those like myself that only think Canada's about Toronto and Montreal, and then the rest of it's just mountains and bears. What's Saskatchewan like?
Yeah, Saskatchewan. Okay, so you have Vancouver, which is over on the west coast, and that is very rainy. It's the ocean, the Pacific Ocean. So
that's like where they filmed heaps of the X-Files.
Very rainy all the time. Yeah, exactly. And David Duchovny famously hated it there enough that he eventually forced the production back to Los Angeles.
What a winter.
Well, he was also just away from his family a lot, so I can sympathize. And then you move a little further towards the middle, you get into the mountains. And BC, of course, has mountains as well. There's British Columbia and then Alberta, and then there's Saskatchewan. So Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, the adjoining province of which we do not speak, are the prairie provinces. So kind of like the breadbasket provinces for Canada, where like most of the wheat and grain are produced. Right. And then you get into like Quebec, Ontario, and all of the Atlantic provinces. Toronto is a big joke to everybody else in the country because they're all like, oh, Toronto, the center of the universe.
Oh, really?
We meet someone from Toronto who my wife and I went on a tour of Europe when on our 10-year anniversary, because we never did take a honeymoon before that because we were pretty young and pretty broke. So we finally took a tour. And there were people on the tour from Toronto with us who had no idea what we were talking about when we mentioned Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. But there was Aussies on that same tour who were like, oh, yeah, we've heard of Saskatchewan. I'm like, of course.
Well, they've heard people from Toronto heard the
don't think anything else exists. Yeah. and I had actually heard of a couple of places. I had a couple of Australian acquaintances. And so I mentioned a couple of things. And they're like, oh, you heard of Bris Vegas?
Yeah. Well, you told me, like, oh, you're in Bris Vegas. That's like, Bris Vegas is a funny term because Bris Vegas is nothing like Las Vegas. It's very much the opposite. I mean, it's a big place, but it ain't no Vegas.
I assumed it was an ironic name.
It's got to be. But I'm ex-Army, and when I was in Army, if you were going to get a posting, it was to Bris Vegas, because it really is one of the best places to be posted and to live. It's a very green city, as in, like, there's just lots of trees and bush, and it's just a good climate-wise, so... I guess for what we look for in a place, it's kind of a Vegas-y type, but there's like not many casinos and there's not a lot of neon lights and all that sort of stuff. So, but you said Bris Vegas. I was like, this dude knows what he's talking about. He knows the jingo. Yeah, cool. So like anybody else that I end up having these kind of conversations with, I kind of I've seen you around like Instagram and Facebook. You're pretty prolific on Facebook. It's probably your main where I see you around the most, a lot of Game Boy builds and stuff. So, yeah, maybe just let's start with, I guess we can kind of work backwards from there. Like, how long have you been modding Game Boys? And, you know, is it something, obviously you have a real job because you mentioned it before. And, yeah, is it just the same as your work, or is it different? Or, yeah, just fill us in on why Jared Funk became Primetime Funk Mods.
If you want to dial back to the beginning, for one, I run a mobile store for a major Canadian mobile provider, the best one, but I won't go on record with that. I've been doing that for a long time. So I've been managing a store since 2010, and it's in tech, right? So I've always, it is in sales, but I found out pretty early on in life that I can't really sell anything that I'm not really into. So
yeah.
I dabbled in a couple other things like furniture and cars, and it just didn't pan. Like I was doing okay, but I just didn't enjoy it. So I found what I was kind of passionate about, like emerging tech and being able to be sort of on like the vanguard of new stuff that's happening in the market. And that really just clicked with me. So now as for the Game Boy stuff, like in the year 1999 is when I actually bought my first Game Boy. It was a teal Game Boy color with a little worm light, and I owned Super Mario Brothers Deluxe and Metal Gear Solid and Bionic Commando Elite Forces. Beat Metal Gear Solid and Bionic Commando and gave up on Super Mario I was like, this is ridiculous. How am I this bad? I'm a grown person. So after a little bit, I just got bit by the bug because I didn't have video game systems growing up. I was from a large family, and my parents didn't really believe in it. They just wanted the kids to play outside and, you know, live life, which I can't really fault them for. I traded in that Game Boy and got a PlayStation 1, and then ended up, you know, just bouncing from console to console for a while.
Yeah.
So
what consoles did you go through?
It was the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 1, and I found that my favorite game ever for PlayStation, aside from Metal Gear Solid, because obviously that is sacred, were the Parasite Eve games. And I don't even like horror movies or horror games. Like, I can't get into Resident Evil because I get too freaked out. Same with Silent Hill. For some reason, Parasite Eve was just the right combination of stuff, and it was just a solid Squaresoft action RPG kind of a deal. So after a little while, I was working at a video store at the time, like when the next generation came along. And so I ended up going with an original Xbox instead of a PS2, because I was like, the Xbox completely outpowers the PlayStation 2 series. I stuck with the Xbox, and then when the next time a trade-up came around, I ended up going with a PS3, because I was actually working for Sony at the time. There was Sony stores in our city, and I ended up working there and kind of got to check out specs and, you know, what was going on with the new generations. And the PS3 at the time just blew away the Xbox 360 in terms of, you know, even just basic resolution. I think 360 was playing at like 900p. And the PS3 was full 1080, and it also had a Blu-ray player, so which is I think part of the reason why Blu-ray ended up winning out over HD DVD, is because Blu-rays all of a sudden were common. So from then on, I did get a PS4, and that's the most recent system that I still own. It's unfortunately very dormant these days, because the only thing I was using it for the longest time, like since we had our first child, I hadn't sat down and actually like played a PS4 video game pretty much since then. So the Game Boys and the handhelds kind of happened out of necessity. Because after a while, it was like right before the pandemic, I'd say it was the fall before 2020. So it was in 2019 in the fall. The previous Christmas, I had gifted myself a Raspberry Pi 3B Plus, like complete with case and everything like that, because I just said, I want to figure this out. Yeah. I had read, you know, a bunch of different places, and I heard that they were really great for retro gaming. So I gifted it to myself, much to the amusement of my family. I went to open it up, and they're like, who's that from? I'm like, never mind.
Someone that really loves me and knows me well.
Exactly that. And my wife just rolled her eyes, as she does. And so going through and figuring that thing out sort of like set something off in me a little bit. So I ended up later on down the line ordering a Retroflag GPI case, and got to, you know, figure out how to get one of those guys working. And then I actually joined a really strong internet community. At the time, it was called Super Retro Pi, group, and now it's called Super Retro City. And through talking to those guys, I just liked hanging out on the page and seeing what people were doing. And it was a lot of stuff that I hadn't really dug into, but there's a lot of different interests. They're not really restricting it to specifically RetroPie or otherwise, just retro gaming in general interest. But, you know, if you put up a post about, you know, your Switch game or something like that, nobody cares.
So the Pi is such a good entry, isn't it? Because you can just just get an image and just burn it to an SD card, and you can have so much at your fingertips. But you can really tweak it. Like, I built a Pi into an arcade cabinet, which involved like a two-player kind of fight stick drop-in thing. I've got a 3B Plus, as you've said. It's still hooked up. The 3B Plus was probably because I had that, and I was gifted this we were talking before, this 29-inch Trinitron. And prior to that, I was playing on LCD, but I was using shaders and filters to get the CRT effect. But then what I did was I went from HDMI out to a like RCA a converter. And all of a sudden, all the scan lines was real because it was a CRT. And that was kind of when I went, oh, I wonder if I should just pick up like a Super Nintendo and see how that goes. And yeah, kind of just, it all cascaded from there. But the Pi,
the spirals.
There's so much you can do with different controllers and different shaders and themes and bits and pieces, even things like save states. You can make it so that it auto increments. So you can get, you know, save here when you're playing something like Mega Man, which I'm crap at. And you kind of get 10 saves in and you're like, shit, I need to go all the way back. And you can just skip back, and it really is a gateway to retro gaming. And anybody that says it's a waste of time or it's not worth it, well, if you can afford to collect PC Engine, then go for it. But I can't, and I want to experience these games, you know.
Dear Lord, Neo Geo.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're talking about, like, those things might as well be made out of plated gold.
Absolutely.
So these guys at hi guys, they said they swore they're gonna listen to this afterwards. So I ended up chatting with the group of dudes who are the admins of the Super Retro Pi group. It was just a really welcoming environment, and they were very willing to answer questions and stuff like that. Not really like the standard hands off moderator. I only drop in when someone makes me. So I just kind of got to be friends with them, and so I'm actually an admin on that page right now too. And so we still trade information back and forth. I am a small man amongst larger men, who know a lot more about the hobby and, who are a lot more involved. Those guys actually create their own and edit their own, Pi images. That was part of the reason I ended up chatting with them about it and everything, because they had actually made some really amazing solid builds for Raspberry Pi stuff in particular. So I have a couple of Pi units, one hooked up to my CRT, one hooked up to the HDTV, and that's where I sort of cut my teeth. And then I got a GPi case, so portable, RetroPi gaming. RetroFlag makes some pretty amazing products for good prices. And so I don't mind hawking their wares a little bit because it's pretty quality stuff. And it's really good for someone who wants to get into entry level.
Yeah.
So safe shutdowns built in, a lot of stuff that just makes it easier for
the safe shutdown thing is essential.
Yeah.
I've helped a few people out, and it's a bit like Gremlins. It's like there's the one rule is don't feed them after midnight, don't get them wet. And I was like, when you have this, don't just turn it off at the wall. And within a week, they're like, I turned it back on, and this just looks like an old DOS computer. And I'm like, did you shut it down or turn it off at the wall? Like the one that lives in my garage in the arcade cabinet, it never turns off. I read a bunch of stuff. A dude had like, he'd like monitored his, and he's like, this thing cost me like 20 cents a week to leave running. And I'm like, I'm fine with that.
And so honestly,
it just stays running, and my monitor
most of the problems that I've experienced have been when I'm like going to turn the thing back on again after 3 months dormant.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm like, oh, what did I do? I didn't do anything, but something's happening.
Yeah, that's right.
I learned my lesson on that. So a couple of months goes by. I ended up downloading and using some of their information. They invited me to join the Inbin group there. And then we just got to have fun. So learning a bit more. All these other guys that are in the Inbin group are a bit deeper into the hobbies. Like one guy is a professional photographer, but he is like an amazing old hand at taking apart and putting together video game systems since he was a kid. And so he's one of the guys who helps build and test the images. One of the guys, they're all pretty multi-talented. So for me, I very much felt like a dabbler, but I was still just genuinely trying to help other people who were beginners, right? So, and they saw some value in that, and it's not like it's a paid position anyways, but, we're all there because we want to be,
it's nice when you can be in that gray area though, where you know enough to help someone out, but you're not kind of being bombarded because you have the answers to everything. And when you've spent those nights plugging away, like I can remember doing stuff like, because I own like, I think 5 of the 8-bit controllers, and trying to set it up so that this particular controller will only be player one. Because sometimes you turn one on, it becomes player one. And you do this, you're like, I'm trying to use the actual Bluetooth tag of the device to ensure that when I play SNES, I turn it on, this one will be the one. And you're just trying to make controllers smooth. And next thing, it just shits yourself. And you're like, so I guess my advice, if you're going to ever dabble in RetroPie, is just back up your image. It's not that hard. If they're going to if you're going to spend a night cacking away, get the little bit of software that not only writes the image to the SD but backs it up. Just back it up, because in the morning you will thank me. Because when you start tinkering, you start doing stuff, and next thing you know, you've killed it, and you didn't back it up. And for the sake of going to having a poo and making a cup of coffee, which is about how long it takes, you'll thank
me. Yeah.
It's so worth it.
And don't use Balena Etcher.
Right.
For some reason, certain sites recommend that as like the top of the line. When WinDisk 32 Imager is patently reliable. Balena is super weird. I don't know why they keep on fiddling with it when they don't need to. The basic building blocks were there to be a good disk image writer and reader.
And don't skip on SD cards, right? I mean, you can buy a $12 card.
Oh, you got to buy a good one.
Just, it's the heart and soul.
If it came free with your BlackBerry from 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't use that one.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think, around Christmas. Yeah. Christmas 2019, I started like kind of looking into it. I found a local guy who was actually a member of the same Super RetroPie group.
Oh, that's cool.
Somebody else in Saskatoon.
An actual human that you can get, you can talk to.
Yeah, yes. A proof that someone from the group was actually human.
That's right. Not all bots.
And then, he 3D prints stuff for me on the regular. He's a super good dude. And then he also sold me my first, like, legit Game Boy, and it was a DMG that had been backlit and biverted, and had a rechargeable battery built in, and he cut a little hole for the micro USB charger. And so The first thing I did was I bought an EverDrive GBX7 because I knew I was going to be horrible at all of these games.
Yeah.
And so many of the older games were made for like, you actually have to finish this in one sitting or you lose all your progress.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't handle that kind of rejection. I'm too old for this. Plus I have two children.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is that I can pick this up for 5 minutes, get kicked around by Mario, and then just save it and put it back down again.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes back to I haven't played a serious video game for over 5 years now. Mm-hmm. Since their first child was born. I would love to play Metal Gear Solid 5 on my PS4, but that would require 2 hours of relearning the menus and the inventory system before I could even play. So, So, I did eventually cave on that a little bit and got a Switch, but with mostly platformer games. So, the Switch Lite that I found locally from a reseller was in mint shape. Mm. And it was at that price that I had set in my head, like, okay, I don't need to buy a Switch unless somebody posted it this price. I shot myself in the foot with that one. So that was the first one I got, the original DMG with a washed yellow backlight and a rechargeable battery. And man, did I ever have fun on that thing.
It's a good way to get in.
Mario Land 2, and then Super Mario Land 3, Wario Land, and I just kept on plugging away at those for a little while. I'd try a couple other games here and there because the EverDrive's got like the full Game Boy and Game Boy Color libraries on there. I found myself the next one thing I did, like my first real mod was from the same guy. I actually got a Game Boy Color that was a teal, so like the original one that I had, but it had just a simple drop-in one of those AIO screens. So the kind of ones you got from Cloud Game Store and stuff like that.
Is it like the Aioli from Ben Venn style?
Kind of. It is the Chinese ripoff of the Aioli. It's really just fold up and a really easy drop in without doing any alterations to the shell. Mm. So that was where I actually started, again, just swap the EverDrive over into the Game Boy Color, and all of a sudden a whole new world opens up again. And that's when I was hooked. So I started looking into, like, what can I do with this? And so I just take the Game Boy Color apart, and I put it back together, and I fiddle around with the screen. Like, okay, that's how it works. And for anybody who's starting out, like, I actually made a video pretty early on that was specifically this mod, because I'm like, this is where I started. This is actually pretty attainable for the average Joe or Jane. And you're buying something that you can just drop in there. You're not having to worry about extra power requirements because those things don't take up a lot of battery. And it just means you're not wrecking your original beloved one. So you could use the one that you had since you were a kid, you know, clean it up a little, drop this in, and all of a sudden it's got like a whole new life to it.
Because
there still is really no comparison between backlit and non.
So, it's impossible. I've got to sit in weekly. The sun. I don't know how people did it. It's impossible.
It's one of those, I don't know if it's, what's the, they call the Mandela effect, about people who have like a shared cultural memory of something that never happened.
But
this seems to be either like a shared dream, like one of those archetypal dreams that people have, like when you're losing your teeth or you're delivering a speech in front of the school in your underwear or something like that. Everyone has these common archetypal dreams. And in this particular case, it's people in the back seat of the car driving home from a trip with their parents and trying to actually play the original DMG. Every time the street light came on, they'd be able to like play for 4 more seconds and put it on pause.
Oh gosh.
I've heard that story from so many people, and I was like, man, that just, it feels like childhood. Like, once people started telling me about it, like, I think I remember doing that. Jared, you didn't have a Game Boy.
I'm exactly the same. I'm with you. I can 100% remember doing it, and I know 100% it's a manufactured memory. I did not do that, but I've heard it so many times that I can remember. I was going to bring up your YouTube before, because you do have a lot of good stuff on your YouTube, just a little sort of simple ways of going about it and doing a few different mods and stuff. The your most recent one there is the clear SNES shell. Now, I have the Australian SNES shell, the clear one. That's that's gorgeous, isn't it? Those shells are on the next level of just Like a clear Game Boy is gorgeous, man, he but does the SNES thing work. Is bonkers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a dude in Taiwan that I kind of got to know through the Facebook group. He was just another member of the group, and we kind of got to talking, and he had already chatted with a couple of the other guys too, and he just kind of mentioned, you know, like, this is something I'm putting into the works. So he's got a whole pretty amazing setup on like the Retro Game Restore website, where he's doing like multiple old consoles now, and this dude apparently lived like blocks away from the factory where these things are being fabricated.
So it's RGR Dev
on Instagram. RGR Dev on Instagram. If you go to his website first, it's Retro Game Restore. Funny part is like I put a couple of his things together and published the videos, and then he actually like added them to the page for those products on his site, and I was flattered isn't quite the word I'm looking for. It was pretty awesome. You know, I don't get paid for it or anything. I long ago gave up any delusions of grandeur about like living off of being a YouTuber or anything like that. I've got kids and a wife and a family to support, so I'm not really putting everything on the line for that, for the clicks and the likes. But what I really wanted to do from the beginning is I found that there was the reason for the YouTube channel, because again, no delusions of grandeur, was that I've done a lot of like talking on camera and off before. Like I have helped a friend with a podcast for a number of years and sort of off and on. So I knew I was kind of okay with having the voice for it, but I also knew I didn't want to see my face on camera. So I just put together a fairly cheap but simple setup where I can record with my smartphone and have some of the old Windows Live Movie Maker 2012, which is really all I need to be able to do the editing required for that. So on the cheap but decently planned. But the main point of the channel is because I found a lot of stuff. Like I'd look at, you know, how to do this particular mod, and then I'd end up, you know, getting directed to something like Mako, where he's like getting really into the actual theory behind it and like doing like power settings and testing multimeter for like, this is how much output it has when it's on, off. And I'm like, I am lost. I'm not an electrical engineer. I'm mostly a user and not a take apart and tinkerer. But the thing is, I started out slow and small with the Game Boys, and just, you know, that first Game Boy Color. I eventually took apart the DMG, did some upgrading to it, and still, you know, kept up a dialogue with the local guy who is actually, I think he's actually an electrician. But the key thing being that there was a bit of a gap there for beginners. Oftentimes you'd have to like go in, and even though you didn't know some of the things that they were basing their premises on, or you did not know how to solder, but they're kind of like, so you solder this, 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 and this. That doesn't sound simple to me. I've never picked up a soldering iron. And the first time I did was a bit of a nightmare. The guys from the Super Retro Pie or Super Retro City admin group kind of shepherded me through that one. Needless to say, that Game Boy Advance is still alive today, but minus the TP3 pad. So, as it is, there was just enough of a gap that I thought I could fill it. I just wanted to be able to do some really simple videos for people who are starting out like me, and just really spell stuff out verbally on the videos, and make sure that I wasn't, you know, just kind of jumping around to different intermediate difficulty levels, that kind of thing. So,
and you've even
covered the channel went on.
You got a 3DS with the custom firmware, which I think is what it's highly misunderstood. I don't know anybody that talks about the 3DS, but I think it's probably amongst all of my consoles, all of my handhelds, I think the 3DS is probably my favorite. It just blows me away every time I find some rando game. It's, you know, this thing's been, I don't know who owned it, but the battery's still in good shape. All the buttons are still good. It looks gorgeous. You turn a game on, you run a bit of 3D for a few minutes, you go, all right, that's cool. You know, my play might be the Luigi's Mansion or Mario, but just the concept of it is weird amazing.
One. I keep the 3D on. I keep the 3D on because I actually really like the effect. And so that's the thing, though, is I've got the new 3DS.
Correct. Same
as I actually had the original.
Yeah.
And I did the customization stuff to it. And then I found and I was like, I've got a line on a new one that has like the better tracking and the better speed.
Yeah.
And then I pretty much just like sold it what I got it for. And then I picked up the newer one. And the funny part is, I dearly love my 3DS XL, but the thing is a brick. So I just got my hands on a smaller size new 3DS recently. Mm. I had almost pulled the trigger on ordering one from Japan. And I actually did one night, like late when I had bad judgment, because it was going to be like almost $300. But I'm like, no, had my eye on this one. This is the exact face plates I want on it. This is the exact model. And I could carry it around in my pocket and do all this stuff. And then found out that it was purely Japanese. And I was going to have to like figure out custom firmware before I could even actually do anything in English.
I think they're region locked, aren't they?
So I canceled. Yes, isn't that? Yeah, I canceled that one. But so I'm out for a date day with my wife a little ways back. And I just wander into the pawn shop while she's looking at new clothes. Mm. And they have the exact one I wanted.
What?
With the custom firmware already done.
Yeah, right.
And a bunch of games loaded onto it. Like I was able to confirm, like, yeah, that's standard CFW. So I bought it and it was like $179 Canadian. So I was like, much less pricing, exact model that I wanted. It's got a couple of dings on it, but frankly, it just adds character. So
yeah, it's a daily driver, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I'm super, super happy with that one. So kind of redid and moved all of my CIA files over to that one and reinstalled. Yeah. And there's some software that you can get with the homebrew stuff that actually, it's called Checkpoint. Yep. It actually saves your games, and you can easily move them across from 3DS to 3DS.
So oh, that's pretty cool.
I kind of made that my standard one.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So before you mentioned you could just carry that one around in your pocket, and you're like, I just once picked up this DMG once and blah, blah, blah. But now you're just throwing money at Boxy Pixel builds. Like, they're gorgeous, but holy shit, like... I don't know.
All I can say is that I got a pretty decent tax return this year. That's not an excuse, but
I'm counting also, several. You must have got quite the return, because I'm counting several on your Instagram.
I've got four. That's my most recent picture.
That's several.
I've got the macro. The macro was a lot cheaper because it's just the faceplate. And then I actually also did just essentially the faceplate on the SP unhinged, because I actually wanted to keep it a little bit more lightweight, and I like the idea of being able to like switch off different colors on the back. The GBA and the pocket color is so gorgeous, and it feels so good in the hand. And I really lucked out on that one, because again, late night poor judgment, I ordered because you can't order a separate just sounds so extravagant, but you can't order a separate faceplate for the screen in a different color. Right. I reached out to Nick on Instagram. I'm like, hey, so can you just like swap in a different way? He's like, yeah, we're not doing that yet. We don't have that kind of supply. Mm. If it really takes off, like the model, then we'll probably just like let you pick which color you want to do. But he said, if you order the silver, you're going to get the silver like border for the screen. I'm like, okay. Mm. And then I ordered the silver and the black one and the red buttons and all the things. When that came in the mail, I genuinely felt bad, but it was so gorgeous once it was built, the silver with the black border and the red buttons.
I didn't feel
guilty for long. But then the thing is, I actually had a family member who like played with it for a little bit, and they're like, my son has his birthday coming up, and he just saw that thing and his eyes just like blew out of his head. Can we make him one like that? I'm like, how about I make him a more unique one?
Yeah, yeah.
Incidentally, it would have a silver faceplate on a black shell.
Yeah.
There you go. But I got video recently of him unwrapping the thing and them saying, hey, Uncle Jared built this for you. And he's like, unbelievable. And he sent me a text later on about how he was showing it to his friends. So I lucked out on that one. But he did get like a very unique, like black and silver, gorgeous model. So I don't feel too bad.
No, that's, and it's like, that could be a turning point. I mean, that's something special in a person's life, you know, and to think that the Game Boy, regardless of, mm-hmm. what its format or what its form factor is right now, there's still a young person mm-hmm. being given a Game Boy for their birthday and still going, what? Considering how much there's like the Switch and, you know, like PS5s and Xbox.
Well, yeah, like the same. My nephew, he's got like the Switch. He's deep into Fortnite and Minecraft, and this thing still blew his mind a fair bit. And I actually included one of the Chinese EverDrive flash carts in there with the complete Game Boy and Game Boy Color libraries, and I actually made a separate folder in each with the top 15 games, like so ones that I loved when I was younger, and since I got into the hobby, and then also ones that are like recommended by the internet. So, but yeah, so I got to really curate that experience for him, and that was pretty special. So,
Yeah, cool. Have you? I think you and I were talking about this prior to we sort of hit record here. We're talking about consoles, and you did talk about PlayStation-y stuff, but prior to kind of kids has been a bit of a barrier, I suppose. But prior to that, growing up, had you had much to do with consoles? Just retro gaming? Well, I mean, wasn't retro when you were doing it, like back in the day?
No. On purpose. So like my earliest exposure was, I think, in the seventh grade. Mm. And there was one kid who brought his Game Boy to school with him.
Right.
And if you were very nice to him, he would let you sit and play on it over lunch hour because he'd had it for long enough that he didn't really care.
Yeah.
Just as long as he didn't break it. And he was like, he had like the magnifying glass attachment over top and the side lights and all that kind of stuff. Mm. So I would beg, and like give him my lunch money. And every once in a while I get to do that. And then another kid actually had a Game Gear. So it was a weird cross-section thing. He's like, don't be surprised if the batteries go. I played it for 6 minutes this morning after putting in fresh ones. And it did happen actually once or twice, but that was it. I was kind of starved for it because, like I said, my family, like there's a lot of kids, and some of them were already off to college and chewing through tuition money that my parents were ponying up for. Sure. And so mostly I was a book reader. I read a lot of books when I was a kid, and I had a fairly high reading level. And then, and plus it was just, my mom just didn't really like video games, and she knew other parents whose kids were like doing nothing but sitting inside playing video games all day.
Yeah.
And so she just made a conscious choice that wasn't going to happen. So
yeah,
it changed up a bit in the 12th grade. When I was 17, a friend of mine who lived out of town at like a smaller community, he just left his Nintendo 64 at my place because he was like spending all his time coming over and hanging out after school anyway. So that meant that he also left his copy of Shadows of the Empire.
Right.
And that game blew my mind because we had a decently sized TV, like the old CRT.
Yeah.
Of course, my mom didn't like it, but I was already old enough that she was like, if he was going to get addicted, he probably would have by now. So, and also I just played it when they were all asleep. So Shadows of the Empire was like, I think pretty much my first full game experience. I played that sucker from beginning to end, even with, you know, zero skills acquired before that. And what I thought at the time, the wonky N64 controller. And then that was pretty much it until I got married and moved to the big city in 1999. And then that same year, there was a local game shop where I picked up that first Game Boy Color. That started off the dominoes rolling.
Yeah, right. That's pretty interesting. It's probably fairly similar to my growing up, I suppose. We didn't have much other. I think we had a Commodore 64 for a while, but again, we kind of lived out rural. So we were mostly, you know, watering horses and keeping dogs out of chicken pens and all that sort of stuff. So it wasn't until I was very much an adult that I kind of got into gaming. And So you've got that, what was it, the Clear SNES. Did you just happen to sort of have a SNES, like the RGR Dev one? Did you just have one kicking around and reshell it or what? Because that's a bit of a divergence from your usual stuff.
Nothing if not impatient. So when I saw that product existed, I searched locally for a Super Nintendo with a completely destroyed shell that I'd be able to get for a cheap price. And I found
did exactly the same thing.
Super Nintendo.
Yep.
Yeah. So I found the Super Nintendo for $25.
Yeah, that's about what I paid for mine too. Mine was like corners blowing out. The two shells didn't go together anymore. It didn't have any cables. Yeah. And she's like, it's just amongst a bunch of stuff. I want $30. I don't even know if it works. I had already ordered the SNES shell. So I was like, I just got to find something. And this seems like a worthy candidate. And fortunately, it powered up. So I was good to go.
So, yeah, the one that I got, the shell was not only like desperately in need of retro braiding, but it was like crumbling. I don't know what sort of chemical compounds it was around when it was stored. But the guy I was talking to, he just tended to buy like lots of stuff off of eBay, and he's like, that one should do it. I checked out the board. It's pretty pristine inside. The shell is not great. And so what I did, I got it home, and I had this like big roll of black vinyl tape, and I was like, I got to figure out some way that this thing's going to stay together until this thing comes from Taiwan. Cause he hadn't even like, it hadn't quite hit fully funded yet. He was still holding off on like getting the rest of the line done. So I with a pair of scissors and some determination and creativity, I covered the entire surface of the thing in black vinyl tape enough so that people actually mistook it for a skin of some sort that I had purchased. And then I actually had some extra like stickers I had gotten off of Etsy that were like original size that said Super Nintendo, same as the logo, and put it on there. I think there might still be some pictures of that kicking around on my Instagram. I may have actually put up there the GIMP SNES was alive. So that was its life. But the cool part was that the stakes were so low on that it led me to try another mod for it. So you've heard of Cypher. I think I saw on your Instagram that you got a slate. So he did a video a ways back about converting the SNES over to USB-C charging. And the power supply that I got with it was hot garbage. It was one of the aftermarket ones that could be used for a Genesis or could be used for for the SNES. But when you plugged it in on any TV, the power supply was so bad and leaking bad signal into the actual SNES, very technical terms, bad signal, that it was like there was lines going down the screen constantly. And so I was like, I can't abide this. So I figured, how can I get cleaner power into this? And so I went through the Cypher mod video a bunch of times. I bought an Adafruit cable, like the same one that he recommends in the video, and got it shipped to me within a couple of days. It was like $20. But I was like, again, if you're going to fail on something, then do it on the $25 busted up SNES.
Yeah, correct.
And I was actually able to do the power mod to that one. For anybody listening, the way that I got it to work is you have to have a pretty good power supply to hook the USB-C cable up to.
Yeah.
So an iPad charger is what does the job. I tried other ones and it was inconsistent and the thing would turn off after a few seconds, but I hooked it up to like a full size iPad block. And now I've got an SNES that purrs. And at that point, again, the other thing I had purchased before I ever got the clear was the EverDrive FX Pack Pro, which I'm not going to lie is not cheap.
I did the math
to comfort myself, because same as the EverDrive GB X7, I can develop a hobby of trying to collect all of these games and spend thousands upon thousands of dollars trying to just like get the collection that I want, where I can just like spend the cash right now, spend like $200 to $300 and just like have that covered.
Yeah.
The FX Pack Pro is a beautiful piece of machinery as
well. It is. I have that and I have the one files.
Oh man.
Last night, actually, it's funny you mentioned it. Just last night I was playing, because I play more EverDrive, because the Mega Drive, it has built-in save states, whereas the FX Pack Pro didn't. Yeah. So I just found some custom firmware which gives you save states for anything it doesn't have a hook and didn't use a special chip. So I'm like, okay, because I need save states for the same reasons you were talking before. I don't have 4 hours or the patience or the skills, and so I can get to I try and do it at least in levels. So I'm doing a level at a time, which is how the world's doing on Switch and stuff anyway. So, but those cartridges, I mean, if you can pick up a SNES or a Mega Drive for like $100, which is pretty doable. And then in Australia, it's about $400 for each of those. So for $500, you've got every SNES game that ever was.
That's
a good deal. It's a really good deal. And I don't think there's any complaints ever about any of Chris's cartridges apart from those people that don't quite understand how to use them. And there's not much you can screw up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have, so for my GBA, I have the Easy Flash Omega Definitive Edition.
Yep.
And that is, the Definitive one uses less battery power. It actually has like the Rumble Pack and a couple other features added.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
I found it to be a bit, I found it to be a bit more stable. There, I did have a couple of incidents with the original Easy Flash Omega, which I still don't know if I can necessarily blame the hardware for. But as it is, yeah, the I've had so like no issues with the Omega Definitive Edition since I switched over to that one. I ended up just gifting somebody the original one because they weren't going to be playing quite as hardcore on the thing as I did. So yeah, I definitely am a big believer in the Flash cart. After we're done this, you're going to send me a link to that custom firmware for the FX Pack Pro because I haven't found myself playing it as much as I would like because I need the save states. Think however badly of me as you need.
No, not at all. That's how I do it. But the thing about because you just have like a it's the SNES 2 DS folder or whatever, everything goes in it. And so you're literally just, you just sort of change that to _OG and then you copy this folder on. And if it works for you, it works for you. And if it doesn't, you just delete it and just take away the _OG and life was as it was. I first started playing a few games like things like Final Fight and Captain Commando, and I couldn't get the save states to work. And I was like, oh, it's not working. But in the menu, it shows there's a save state option to fiddle with. And then I kind of read around. There's a bunch of stuff about particular chips and in-game hooks and all this other stuff. And then I tried a few other games. I was like, oh, it does work, just not with. And you can Google up which games don't work on this and have a hook. Stuff. Yeah, and it's like, it's out of the 3 billion SNES games, there's about 100. And it's like, look, if you're sad that that's one of your particular games, and I guess you need to do some soul searching because there's 3,500 other games to look at. So I will definitely send you that link. Yeah, no problems. It's worth it.
Super Metroid MSU 1
Exactly.
Already has the pretty simple save setup. So I've been so close to finishing that game for so long, but another one of those ones I just need to like sit down and do it, or I might just put it on my GPI case and finish it handheld. But yeah, I've been playing Metroid games for like almost continuously since I started this hobby. I'm holding off on the hack that just came out a little bit ago for the GBA version. Someone actually made Super Metroid mostly, or as close as you can get to it, with the Zero Mission engine. The Zero Mission engine, that was a good game, and they had all the building blocks that they needed for it, and like improved physics and stuff like that. So it's pretty sweet. Metroid is dear to my heart.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the first things I fire up on any of the new systems that I've got. So
yeah.
It's also just gorgeous games in terms of like the pixel art and
absolutely. Absolutely. The Zero, so on GBA, there's Zero Mission and then
Fusion.
Right. Fusion, so Zero which Mission
is arguably the best game.
Zero Mission is the game that I got through, and I think it was the first GBA game and probably the only GBA. I got through was it Minish Cap as well? And I was just like, this is how it's supposed to be. And then I got through Samus Returns on 3DS, and then I went back for Fusion. I just something wasn't right for me, and I think I was just all Samus'd out for a bit, if that's humanly possible. I know the people that have gone into Dread on the Switch, and they're like, they've done it, they've maintained the rage, but I'm not getting a Switch for a while. I just have enough to do, and it'll just gather dust. We still use our Wii all the time. Like my daughter and I still play tennis and a bit of Mario Kart, and you know, it's we don't need a Switch yet. I'm just holding out, you know.
Well, Mario Kart. Sorry, that's not the word I meant to say. I meant to say the Wii. That still gives me a ton of joy because I'm still playing Kirby Return to Dream Land on that
one. Yeah,
and a couple other games. Like they did a remake of Klonoa on that one. That is great.
Geez, that's a fun little game.
And that's the thing is, that was one of my early victories as well, because when I just started out with the modding, I decided I wanted to give, you know, modding a Wii a shot, because you got like the whole GameCube experience and also the Wii experience.
Yeah.
I knew I hated the motion controls, so I'm never going to play a game that requires those, like Skyward Sword. And like, I'm the only person on the planet who just hated the motion controls from the get-go, but I think golf with a couple that we didn't really know. But yeah, as it is, I went to pick this thing up and the lady was like, she said $25 originally. I'm like, well, that sounds pretty good. And then I get there and she hands it to me and it smells like an ashtray. Hands me a power cable. She hands me a power cable that's been chewed through. I'm like, do I have any evidence that this works? And she's like, just take it. I want it out of the house. My kids are never going to play it again anyways. I'm like, you could probably just buy a new power cord. She's like, just take it.
Oh, nice.
So I take it. I drive straight to the nearest game shop, find an actual like original Nintendo component cable for it, and which is apparently pretty rare now. And then also the like a real power supply for it. So I spent $20 in total. But I took it home, took it all apart after watching a couple of videos, shined it all up. And discovered that someone had pretty much tried to put like a package of rolling tobacco into the disc drive.
What?
She had kids. No more needs to be said. My kids have done some weird stuff too. Once I got it all cleaned up, I spent about 4 hours from beginning to end learning how to mod it and then getting everything sorted out. I attached a 1 terabyte hard drive to it. And the cool part is you can now partition the hard drive so you can actually have both the Nintendo and the Wii partitions on there. It's pretty sweet. So
what output are you running?
Was Victoria.
What video output are you running from the Wii?
I'm running the component, like the original Nintendo component cable for it, to a RetroTINK 2X Pro. Which was a pretty amazing. And then that's actually running through the HDTV upstairs. I had it hooked up to my CRT for a long time, but I found out when I actually play down here, it echoes through the pipes upstairs. And actually, my kids can hear it in their bedroom. So I actually just moved it up to the HDTV, the 65-inch 4K upstairs. And now whenever I'm playing Wii, I'm playing on the big one. So,
Some of that stuff's so awesome. The RetroTINK stuff. I haven't kind of gone down that road yet because, I mean, all of my consoles go into the CRT. And it's just this, the Wii goes, what are we running? Composite. We're running composite into the big screen LCD, but all of my other consoles go into have these like 1-in 4-out RCA switches, but I've got 3 of them stacked, so we just sort of daisy chains through to get like 11 or must be 9 consoles through. It becomes, I know at some point I was looking at going component on a bunch of stuff and I was like, man, it's gonna cost me thousands just to kind of get a switch set up and things like that. If you got an LCD and you don't have a CRT, it must be really challenging to get what I believe to be a good result, you know, from what you're trying to do is play classic games, retro game on a brand new screen. So I feel blessed to have a big
CRT. I've got a few different ways that I do it. One is I still have the little retro flag Super Nintendo with the 3B Plus hooked up to it. If I want to actually just like turn it on, put it up through HD, then it's beauty. It works great. And then the other option. So first off, one of the ways to actually make this cost effective is to get a RetroTINK 2X Pro for free because of a good friend. One of the guys, John from the Super Retro City group, was just on a random group and someone said, hey, does anybody know anyone who's deserving who needs a RetroTINK 2X Pro because I'm upgrading?
Yeah.
And I don't need this one anymore. And he's like, yes. And shipped the thing. I hope I paid him for shipping. It was a while ago now, but so I ended up picking up one of those for nothing. And here's the other thing. So I have on both the Super Famicom that I've got connected to my CRT and on the clear SNES that I've got upstairs connected to the HDTV. Mm-hmm. There is, I think it's a Canadian company called HD Retrovision, and they make some unbelievably good products. And so I found a cable that goes out, like it's direct out from the back of the Super Nintendo.
Yep.
And the Japanese one, and goes out to component and just tightens up that signal to like an actual true, I think 240p. So when I plug that into the retro tank, it actually is, it then has like real math to work with. And the picture looks unbelievable.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's up on a 65-inch 4K. So, yeah, the HD Retrovision cable, that is also something that I ordered and owned for a while before that Super Nintendo ever arrived. Same with the Famicom. I actually have one for each now because after seeing how it worked on the first one, I couldn't go back to anything else. So, highly recommended product because it does as advertised. But they have cables for doing the same thing for many other old systems as well. You just got to read the site and make sure it works for your version of the console. So.
Yeah, I was looking at these very cables a little while ago for component stuff just to test, because like I got the Saturn and the Dreamcast recently and I was like, oh, these are consoles worthy of doing that job. When I bought my second mode ODE from Castle Games, I got a HDMI adapter cable. So it comes out of the Saturn. It's got a big chunk of plastic in the middle with a bunch of smarts in it. And it goes HDMI. And I put that on my, like, I don't know what it is, 60, 50 something, 60 inch Sony Bravia, and just had to change the aspect ratio. And like the Saturn through that was like, I can't do this very often because this looks so fantastic and I want to keep it on CRT. But when it's done right, like holy cow. And those retro visions, I mean, they do component for Mega Drive and a whole bunch of stuff. And that was when I was looking at it going, that looks so good. And I could do this. I'm like, man, these are like $40 each cable, but I'm gonna end up about $1,000 in the hole just to buy like a component switcher and just a whole bunch of stuff. So
I'm just, yeah, I spread just holding the gate, out
holding
over
the
time.
Damn gate closed just for now. Yeah,
I justify it by saying at least I'm not collecting individual games.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think you saved thousands of dollars on one of my five or six cartridges or ODEs. So yeah, well and truly ahead. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, there's so many ways to get it done.
Yeah. So I'm just looking at my collection here. So I have now, like, some of this stuff is going to get sold to fund BoxyPixel. Nick is trying to kill me, I think, because he just posted some pictures of an actual full anodized aluminum DMG. And I'm like, it's not even a question. I'm gonna end up with it. I'm going to put a couple of things up for sale. So I don't have to worry about feeding my children and having that DMG that is going to be very big and very heavy. So I've got currently seven DMGs. A few of them have sentimental value. Some of them are just like, I happen to have the extras around. And so I got the kit and built them.
Yeah.
I got a few pockets. One of them that's, man, is very, very close to the original, Famicom. I was obsessed with the Famitsu. But yeah, I've been kind of obsessed with the Famitsu design since I saw my first Famitsu pocket. Because like the red DMG buttons and the reflective borders on the lens.
If you dig
back through my Instagram, you'll see that I actually made an entire themed collection around the clear with the reflective lens and the red buttons. So that's going to be a keeper. So I would say out of all my stuff, if I were to like pretty much sell all the rest of those old school Game Boys, I would be keeping anything Famitsu related.
For sure.
And I would also be keeping all the boxy ones. There's a few others, like I've got some that are on the go, people like who are going to be getting back to me that they're like, I'm on my next paycheck if you've still got that. So I'm selling a few items here and there, and I do take commissions here and there as well. I mostly, just because I've got a full-time job and I've got two kids and a wife who need my attention.
Yeah.
So for the most part, whenever, when I'm doing this stuff is when they are unconscious. So,
yeah.
I kind of wait until everybody's asleep. And then that's when I sneak down into the basement and build things and then look up and all of a sudden it's 2 a.m. But it gets me out of my own head. No matter what's going on at work or what's going on in life elsewhere. Just being able to sit down and fix something and figure it out or put together something new and cool. A couple of my most recent ones are the Game Boy Advance with like the crystal clear smoke shell and the gold is that
with
accents.
With a bit of gold inside it. Yeah, that thing's pretty freaking gorgeous.
Yeah.
What's and the gold inside?
Natalie the Nerd. Well, those are actually custom buttons from Lab 15, formerly Jelly Belly, who you are familiar with.
Yeah,
through
sure.
your podcast. So I ordered a few, but I really loved the gold ones. And so I had a gold paint pen and I painted the speaker gold.
Yeah, cool.
It was one of those funny plain clear ones. And I just like putting like little touches on there that make it unique. But, and then there's a gold chrome set of buttons that I was able to purchase from one of the sites recently where I just, I didn't use the D-pad and buttons, but now it's like really nice looking. Mm. And then the crowning thing on it was the Natalie the Nerd GBA LED PCB overlay. So when I turn it on, there's like this warm amber glow that glows throughout the whole thing. And since it's all see-through, it backlights the buttons and the whole deal. There's an Atomic Purple funny playing package that I built recently too, which is pretty sweet. I think just because there's so many people doing it and it's almost become like a staple of the industry now, that I didn't really do like a video on how to put together the Funny Playing Q5 laminated kit, because it's pretty simple to follow the instructions. There were already so many videos out about it, like in week one. So I might still do one of those eventually, just to continue on with my like, here's beginner stuff and here's how you can do a really simple setup to upgrade your Game Boy Color. But with those ones, you kind of need to get like a custom shell for it to fit it. I wouldn't want to hand alter. Oh, dear Lord. I would not want to hand alter one of the regular shells to be able to fit the laminated screen thing in there. Yeah. The previous generation, like the 1.0 RetroPixel Game Boy Color Kit, where it was still using the Q5, all you'd have to do is like, draw lines and, Dremel out some of the inside to make the opening bigger so you can see the bigger screen. But so, four standard GBAs, three GBA SPs, though one of them is now a boxy pixel, and then some of the other single items, like I have a Game Boy Micro that I got from one of the dear friends in the Super Retro City. He had the original Famicom one, like the red with the gold plate.
Yeah, like the Micro anniversary one, 25 or 30 years or something.
Yeah, and he bought it when it was new and he hardly used it because another one that he carried around with him. He couldn't bear to take it around and potentially scratch it. Even then he knew it was going to be worth something. So he and I arranged a trade for like some parts and some cool stuff a little bit ago.
A kidney.
And so, well, it was mutually beneficial to both parties.
He needed the kidney, needed the micro. I understand.
I was delving into some of the free play assembly kits, and he really helped me out with some of that stuff too.
Yeah,
so,
nice.
And then I've got a couple of macros that I've built aside from the boxy one, because that's just a fun side project. They're very low cost to build, especially now that Retro Gamer Store RGR Dev on Instagram actually made a clear faceplate for it, which was really cool. He actually kind of read me in when he was like getting ready to introduce the product. And I was like, this is really cool. The only thing I could think of would be, there's a couple of non-standard parts that people would like order the faceplate from you, but then they'd always be asking you where they're supposed to find these other things. And that's a 330 ohm resistor to, fool the DS board into thinking that the top screen's still there.
Yep.
And then the speaker, which was a PSP speaker. And again, not exactly a standard part.
I've heard they were using Switch speakers as cheap... well. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the Switch speaker is what's recommended on the boxy builds. But on the specifically the Retro Gamer Store one, it's got a spot built into it for specifically the PSP speaker.
Yeah, okay.
So when we were talking about it, I was like, how cheaply can you get those? And then he's like, he was thinking the same thing. He's like, yeah, I'm just going to include them in the package. So
yeah,
you
nice.
Buy the faceplate, he sends you a couple of the resistors and the speaker in there.
Yeah, I think the lens has always been
for anybody to be able to do it.
The lens has been the deterrent for me because it's like you had to get,
yeah.
There was one company in the UK that was just punching out a bunch of lenses. And it's like, now it's, I'm buying from here and buying from there. Like, I think one time I was looking at just doing my own and the lens was going to cost me like $50 because it was only a $12 lens, but I had to ship it from the UK.
And shipping.
Like, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
It's how
was
it is.
Was it Bluish Squirrel you were getting it from?
May have been. I mean, there was somewhere they'd been sort of coming for ages and ages, and all of a sudden it was like, this is kind of the only place you could get them, you know? Yeah. I don't know about you, but
such
the SP has become really hard to find. Like, I can't get an SP over here at the moment. There's some going for like $150 to $200 because people want ridiculous amounts. But to just find a beta just to turn into this slab, the Xyphus slab, I can't find a beta here anywhere. So I'm just going to have to sit on this until something turns up on Facebook Marketplace. It's a little frustrating because I remember this, 2 years ago,
Facebook Marketplace $50-$60 will come through eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, every once in a while I find somebody locally who's got, like, again, they got a box full of them from somewhere and they're just like selling them and they're making a little bit on each one, but they're selling them in lots pretty much. And so that's when I usually find the best price and just pick up a couple of extras to finish off a couple of builds.
Sure.
But yeah, so I've got a free play CM3 that I built myself, which is I'm still very proud of because it was a heck of a lot of work. It's because you got to cut to fit. It's not the same thing as doing the free play zero, which is essentially just like, file out one little hole for the charger and that's that.
So what drives the free play?
Actually,
it's like a totally custom board, right?
Yeah. The free play is a custom board and you can either get the free play zero, which works with the Pi Zero and I guess probably the Pi Zero 2 now. Which is pretty amazing because that'll play like the full Super Nintendo catalog, even the FX chip stuff, which is kind of why I went with the CM3 version in the first place.
Yeah.
But you have to actually, hand, a lot of Dremeling to take out chunks. And it's really just like cut, sand, and then test, cut, sand, and test. And it was a repeated process. It was about 8 hours from beginning to end. And it's a complete device because you can like HDMI out to a television and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, right.
But the one that I've got is I modeled it on the Super Famicom because my buddy Sam had his own store at the beginning of the pandemic where he was building free plays to spec for people. And I saw a couple of his builds and I'm like, that's the dream.
Yeah, yeah.
It's gorgeous. So I took some pictures for later and when the time came, I was like, I think I've actually got my skills built up to where I can do this now. Mm. I actually built one of the older kits that I got for pretty cheap from somebody. And that's where I made all my mistakes. And then I took that knowledge and put it into building the one for myself that I will be keeping forever.
Yeah.
And that's when I get into the newer system. So I've got a DS Lite and then the, just a regular size DSi, a DSi XL, and then the weird 2DS that's like one slab.
It looks like something you give a 4-year-old.
Yeah, that's kind of the plan. They were on sale new for $60 from Nintendo's website. I was like, I'm gonna do that thing because it's just I wouldn't care if it got broken because I have two small children around, and eventually my wife will let them play a video game. And then there's the 3DS XL and the smaller 3DS that I acquired recently, and then one of the crowning pieces of my collection, which also is sort of in the Famicom theme, is the Game Gear.
Ooh. A Famicom flavored game.
That was a project. Man, it's completely clear.
Yeah.
With a black D-pad and red buttons. So you should actually be able to see that one up on the Instagram if you scroll back a ways too. But that one, that was a 3-day build. And I had a couple of people to thank for it. And Retro Gear Customs, he actually builds Game Gears to spec for people and like custom paints, and has built him with, I think, McWill and Ben Venn and Retro 6 clean screen kits, all of which are fairly complex. I found, after I did the research, the Retro 6 one was by far the easiest of the bunch.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, my soldering skills are up to this. So
yeah, right.
I was actually able to, you know, install the new screen, you know, clean up the board. It had already been recapped when I got it, thankfully, the Game Gear. But the thing that took the most time and energy was I actually built a LiPo battery setup in it where you can actually use the Retro 6 USB-C board. That's like the newer parts, because I replaced the soundboard on it and also the power supply with the Retro 6 parts.
Oh,
but the thing is that at the time, the Retro 6 board was only made to plug in with USB-C, so you could power it without batteries. So I talked to, you know, Andrew Hendrick from Metro Gear Customs, and Keith Fitzgerald, and they both kind of walked me through the steps. Now, Andrew had just done a mod where he actually just did powered the USB-C straight through the lithium polymer battery using a TP4056 charging protection board. And so my idea that I had is I wanted to actually have one battery in each chamber, like where the batteries usually go, and actually daisy chain them together. So when you plug in the USB-C into the Retro 6 board, it would actually charge both. And so it required me learning a lot of stuff that I did not know before. So I still have like a drawer full of step up converters, because you had to take the power coming in from the USB-C and step it up to 9 volts. And that was not fun. But when it was done, I had this pretty awesomely built unit that has, you know, combined 4,000 mAh battery. And you can play a ton before you even start to dent the battery life. And then works with the new clean screen. It just looks gorgeous. And the EverDrive. The Game Gear EverDrive was the last piece of the puzzle. Because again, I'm not hunting for Game Gear games for the rest of time.
Oh, so, God, no, that's...
And now here's the punchline. Retro 6 makes some good stuff for the Game Gear. And like a week after I finished this mod, they released a package that was $30 that gives you a power board that now plugs directly into two lithium polymer batteries and is made to charge them. I have people asking me, like I posted pictures of like, oh, how did you do this? I'm like, it doesn't matter. Don't do it.
You can
spend $30 instead of 3 agonizing days putting this together and making sure that everything is charging safely. and just buy the Retro 6 kit. And people still will occasionally catch the old post and they'll be like, hey, can you tell me how this is? I'm like, nope, I'm not telling you with that. I will not do that to you. I want the best for you. So I'm going to tell you to just go buy the Retro 6 battery kit for it. Yeah. so I still have the pride and joy of having done that myself and not having accidentally killed myself or anyone else. The other two guys were very supportive, but So yeah, that's the collection. I have too many Game Boys. This is a common affliction of people in this hobby.
No one has too many.
So every once in a while, I know. I talked to some guys who are just like, they started it like a business and they treated it like a business all the way through. And I'm on a Metal Game Boy Builders Facebook group as well. It's a bit smaller, but it's really for like boxy enthusiasts.
Sure
some of the new Slate stuff coming along too will end up popping up in there, because
all those Marco guys drive Slate's like Jaguars and McLarens and stuff, right?
I do not. I have a 2009 Toyota Matrix that my wife and I share.
You're a poser, mate. You need to get a
probably Jaguar. Yeah, apparently. But yeah, these guys are all like waiting for parts to come in because they have like builds and they have a shop where they're actually like building these things to spec for clients who've already like pre-purchased it. So when I do commissions, I keep it pretty low key.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to have to feel suspicious, because I've been in sales for a long time and I found like the more you make it a concierge experience, and it's like, I have employees, right? So we run a mobile store. A lot of people are if there's any sales involved, people get naturally suspicious. So I'm just like, we're not here to sell people the new cool thing that you think is awesome. We're here to ask people questions about what their needs are and then present to them options that maybe they didn't know about before, because it's not their job to know. So when I'm actually dealing with someone who says, hey, can you build me something? I'm like, oh, sure I can. So I ask a bunch of questions. It usually takes a couple of days of like back and forth while they kind of decide and see pictures, like, because I'll send them like pictures of random builds off the net and say, hey, is this the kind of idea that you have? Until they finally, they have an idea of what it is. And then I send them screenshots of the exact cost of that thing on Retromodding, Handheld Legend, Retro 6, whatever's going to be closest and easiest for us to order it from, or whoever's actually got those specific parts. So they know exactly what those parts cost.
Yep.
And then I just say, hey, the only cost that we have to talk about then is the cost of shipping it to you after it's done, and then labor. So, because I didn't make these parts. I don't hand cast them at home. All we're doing is putting together the things that you want into like a solidly built package. So I was like, this is my minimum for like 1 hour of work. But if it's more than that, it's going to be this much per hour for my work after that. And this is what this job generally takes me. So nobody has to worry about if they're getting marked up ridiculously, or how much does this actually cost? Am I getting ripped off? And it's a little more work than just like posting something and someone like buying it. But as it is, the commissions I do almost purely by word of mouth, and just every once in a while I'll make a post and someone says, hey, is that something you could build for me? I'm like, yeah, let's talk about it.
It must be fun to be someone that has no Game Boys and just goes, oh, that looks really awesome. I'd like one of those, and go through that experience with someone like yourself designing it and just getting that one expensive metal CNC Game Boy and just being happy. Like I kind of envy that person a bunch sometimes.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like if you meet someone and they've never seen The Matrix for the first time, and you're like, whoa, do I have something for you?
Yeah, that's right.
Or, you know, just experiencing something for the first time. Like, one of my first recommended games to my nephew was the original Super Mario Land in the DX format, so the fully colorized version. I'm like, that would be an amazing first game to play on this amazing Game Boy Color. And I think he took me up on it. He was fiddling around with it. But yeah, I think I just want to be able to create that kind of experience for someone, because I lucked out. The first person that I bought from, the first DMG actually had a little bit of some power issues afterwards, and the guy lives blocks away from me. He's like, oh yeah, just drop it off, let me take a look. And he found some corrosion on the main board and he took care of it, and fixed it up, and then it was good. So I had a good experience with my first Game Boy. And I think the key being that, you know, some of these folks who are asking for commissions and stuff have, you know, used Game Boys before, but they've never gotten to like build their own from the ground up, right?
And they were much newer and stuff back then when they had them. So
their
expectations are, this will just work, right? You know?
Yeah. A couple of the, I think I've actually got a couple of videos on the channel now of one of the things that I tell people if they want is that I can like record the actual build, and they actually can, it'll be published and they can watch me building their Game Boy in real time. So if you go back onto the channel, you'll find a couple of there's one where I build a GBA from the ground up for a really nice dude I met at one of the groups, and he was pretty happy with it, and he actually got to see it being built, and he was like, this is a really cool experience. I don't even know what to think of this, but it's we have all this technology and we can, so there's not really a good reason why I just couldn't turn on the camera and let him see how his Game Boy took shape. So
that is very awesome. That is very awesome. Especially someone that, you know, is paying a decent amount of money for something that seems really complicated. And then you go, well, yeah, it kind of is. Like, this does seem simple, but, you know, I've spoken to many people about just doing like an IPS, and I've done 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9 myself, including a couple of pockets. But I've destroyed at least 3 or 4 screens along the way by just being impatient or putting a bit of tape here or soldering a wire to the little jumper ribbon when it was still attached to it, because I wanted to get this done on a Friday afternoon when all my people were still at school and work. And it's like, you kind of look at people that have gone through a bunch of stock just to get the right result for a customer, because they don't kind of care. They've given you their money and they mm-hmm. want a thing that works. So people that just kind of commit, I feel like so I'm going to do this. I'm going to get a bunch of stock and I'm going to build a bunch of Game Boys. And I'm kind of, I sort of like notionally pat him on the back and say, well, good luck, because there's about 600 like
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's a lot of overhead.
Yeah, and there's about 600 people just like you that just yesterday thought, I can do this. So I think the experience and everything is going to make the difference, because at the end of the day,
yeah,
you could give me the same parts that you just built a boxy pixel thing, and I could ask someone the same amount of money, but I guarantee the result will be quite different. And experience dictates that, but at the same time, you know, people want the thing they paid for. And everything's so expensive. I mean, you're looking to pay, you could probably buy a Switch for the price of a decently built boxy pixel, you know, like that's... You know, a Switch is pretty cool.
If you're lucky. Yeah, I don't really want to get into the cost because it's a little depressing. But
as a consumer, should, like all of us, we can all go on the webpage and price out, you know, a GBA boxy pixel minus a screen minus a board, and you're like, holy moly! I mean, shipping is a killer. Things make a lot of difference. You know, that would probably cost me $70 in shipping. So that's going to be about a quarter of the price. But at the same time.
Well, that's what you get for living on a remote island out in the middle of the ocean. But yeah, Canada isn't quite as expensive for the shipping there. And if you actually live in the States, where a lot of the modders do, it's not as much of a thing.
Yeah.
The guys that I'm on the admin group with on Super Retro City, they ship stuff in between each other all the time. It's like 2 days and cost them $10.
Yeah.
And then they go to ship something to me and they're like, it's going to be $35. I'm like, what? it's weird though. Like shipping from the US to Canada is ridiculous, but I can ship something from, you know, where I am to anywhere in Canada or to anywhere in the States for $20. That's usually an easier part of the conversation where we're like, so they're like, oh God, I don't even want to know how much shipping is going to be. I'm like, it's $20. If it's like 22, I'll cover the $2, but yeah, just broad strokes.
Yeah. That's cool. Cool. Well, look, thanks. We might just sort of start wrapping it up a little bit here with a few shout outs and stuff. But
yeah.
I think it's a lot of us are modders and a lot of us are collectors, but then some of us, we just collect and, you know, I've done my own, but I have several builds that I asked someone else to do for me, you know, and I paid them for it and I got a good result. And it's nice to know that you can just find someone that, hey, you give me your money, I'll give you what you ask for. And, you know, the after sales support is as important as, you know, as the actual initial sort of receiving of the product. So there's a lot of sketchy going ons out there in any hobby, in any industry. And the more people we have that aren't sketchy, you know, it's easy for little parts of a certain community to become a little bit inundated with sketchiness because it's they're using knockoff parts, they're using shortcuts and stuff. So I like to speak to people like you. They're like, no, this is how I do it. And I'm going to make sure you get your money's worth. And I'm selling you a McLaren. So I guarantee this is going to be exactly how it's supposed to be.
Yeah. You at least get to see. And I think that's the biggest difference. Like, there's a lot of guys who sell stuff and there's like Game Boy buy and sell groups. I don't really join those because I don't know. Every once in a while you hear stories of like someone who just disappears off of these groups and takes people's money and parts with them. Happened kind of recently that someone who was like a pretty active member of the community just fell off the face of the earth and had stuff of people's. I guess that's kind of why when I decided I was going to do any commissions at all, I kind of laid it out like this is how I do my regular job. People get to see exactly what they're getting and exactly what they're paying for. So why would I do this any differently?
It's a bit like cryptocurrencies. This is like these builders come up, take a bunch of cash, and then they're gone. And you're like, oh, that was gonna be my Game Boy sort of thing. Where's all the crypto you promised me?
Yeah, but I know absolutely nothing about crypto. Like could have said it's just like cryptocurrency. It crawls into your pocket and wipes your credit cards and steals your wallet. That would be like, yeah.
I'm not a crypto nut either, but I do know there's a bit of a, there's a bit of a disease of just people sort of coming up, creating a crypto, and, you know, they get a bunch of influencers to kind of promote it, and then boom, it's over. Mm. And the influencers made a bunch of money, yeah. But all those people that went and bought the whatever, the so-and-so dollar, they're screwed. And like,
yeah,
it can be like that with any of these kinds of hobbies that, you know, this person's like, oh, I'm good for it. Look, I put two lenses in, I changed some buttons, and at the end of the day, they've only got to get 10 people to throw their money at them, and, you know, they've profited, mm-hmm. and 10 people have lost. So it's important that we, you know, highlight those that aren't sketchy, or just doing it smart. Some people aren't mean. They just overreached and went, oh, shit, and they don't have the courage to turn around and go, you know what, I can't do this. I can't get the parts. The ships aren't moving. The planes aren't flying. Here's your money back. That's, you know, mm-hmm. that's the way it should be dealt with, but it isn't, unfortunately, here and there. But on a more positive note, let's have a chat about some of the people that that we think are definitely super positive. Now, I always give a bit of a shout-out. And for this episode, for our chat, is Sakura Retro Modding. It's all one word. The link will be in the show notes.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
He and I have chatted a lot over the last few years. And I've got multiple products of his.
Right. Well, that's actually cool, because I looked at his Etsy and there's like these little Switch pinball machines and a bunch of other stuff. But I think it was the little pinball machines is what kind of caught my eye. So are they like I think he's making those, right? Like little boxes you put the Switch screen in, and then you've got one dude buttons. And he's.
Yeah. Like I just picked up another thing from him recently. I end up acquiring an Ann Burnick RG351P from a mutual acquaintance. Mm-hmm. And the Sakura, I always say Sakura, but I don't know if that's the proper pronunciation, but Sakura Retro Modding, he actually had a border that said Game Boy Advance on this one. So I actually got that, put it on, and then put like a tempered glass screen protector over top. And now it's like perfect. Because it's sort of my GBA emulation machine, because it's exactly double the pixel count of the Game Boy Advance, so the GBA games look just ridiculously good on it. It's not the most powerful emulation device out there, but and then I actually one of the videos on my channel is a review of the battery pack that he made for the GBAs.
That's his.
And at the time, it was actually. Yeah, and he builds that. Like, he designed the PCB, he built them by hand. And the thing just works. It works with the battery indicator light. And at the time, Handheld Legend and Retro6 had released a GBA battery pack that was actually having a lot of problems. Like, you leave it in the machine,
and it
drains itself over a few days.
I bought three all up, and two of mine failed, and they covered them, and there's the reason I got them covered them, but still it was like, oh, that's a bit disappointing. I'm supposed to be able to put this thing on the coffee table and pick it up next Wednesday and play it, and that's not the case.
They did right by everybody. They did release a little kit to fix them if you wanted to fix the one that you've got and didn't charge anybody for it, and then they just fixed it on the next revision. But the one that Sakura Retro Modding sent out just works. I still have it in some, like, I move it around between my different GBAs when I need it. That's cool. I interrupted you, though. Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
We were talking about something that we both knew, and I got excited.
I just sort of, like I said, I see people that are just kind of doing cool stuff and looking around, and, you know, it's good to actually have you in the conversation to go, yeah, that's really cool. Another thing is he's got here is this it's sort of like a Neo Geo mini bar top kit for a Switch. So it's got that red and white kind of sort of livery, and you just drop your Switch screen in the top, and you sort of, that is probably the cheapest way you can own a Metal Slug cabinet. Because Metal Slug's on every console that's ever walked the planet, which is fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So and I, like, apart from that, I just like to see cool stuff that makes me want to spend money and enjoy the hobby. He covers quite a few bases. And I would highly recommend go and check out Sakura Retro Modding. Yeah, that is a tough one. And so, look, over the conversation, like, you and I have talked about Retro Flag, RGR Dev, Zypher, Boxy Pixel, Lab 15 Code, Natalie the Nerd, Retro Gear Customs. I've thrown in Ben Van and Retro 60K. So look, this opportunity for you to promote a little bit about more about yourself. I'm going to put up on your Insta, Facebook, YouTube, whatever else. I'll get those details off you. But other people that you want to, you know, throw a bone to. I mean, I knew who you were, but it was Tendo 209 that kind of mentioned you and a few of the other Canadians there. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So I guess you can kick the can down the Canadian road and see where it lands. But yeah, just go for it, mate. And if you think of people later, you just shoot me and I can add them in as well. You know, it's all fine. And some people just go, oh, look, I just love everybody. It's hard to pick.
Well, one of the guys that has been really like in early days making stuff for the hobby, and not really just like geared at Game Boys, but also just geared at, you know, 3D printing cool stuff. He does a lot of labels for when like Retroflag puts out a new unit.
Who's this?
And people can customize like the, it's an Etsy store called Denier 2 Designs.
Right.
So it's actually, that was kind of how I first got to know him, but it's John. He's one of the guys who runs the Super Retro City Group. So I actually was like ordering stuff from him and kind of got into conversation. And that was sort of around when I started to get to know these dudes. Mm-hmm. So he actually still has like runs his Etsy store and has always got it going. And whenever there's like a new product that comes out for like Raspberry Pis or some something where he could actually build a peripheral that would help people, like they have those Mario Kart toys that you can actually build like a virtual racetrack for it, and you can use like real parts, so it's
augmented. How do you spell reality. That
and he's
his name
DINIERTO and then Designs, and so you'd be able to find that on Etsy. But he makes a lot of really cool peripheral stuff for the hobby. Different, like I first got some cartridge labels for my EverDrive and a couple of replacement ones for my GPI case from him. He's a good dude. It's a side gig that he runs, but he's always like concerned with quality and trying to make sure that he's taking care of his customers. His store is like traditionally 5-star all the way across the board.
Yeah, so awesome.
I know he personally agonizes over it when he gets anything less. So, Denier 2 Designs is a good one to check out. Mm-hmm. As far as other people with the web presence, I think one person that has helped me out a lot over the years, and that I actually got acquainted with through Handheld Legend, like when I was first getting into the hobby and when I was first actually doing the YouTube thing. His name is Dustin Hamilton, and he's actually associated with the Retro Future page and their group there as well. And again, just a really positive dude who like has a really inside track on the hobby because he actually worked for Handheld Legend for quite a while, working in their tech support and stuff like that. He's a really good dude. Just extremely positive person as well. That was the thing. Even when I was just like starting out, he would like watch the videos and give me some tips. And if I want to, I think that was around the time when I was like, I don't think I'm going to be the same level as, you know, the Macho Nacho production stuff. And Tito makes some pretty amazing videos.
Sure does.
That might be somebody that you check out in the future. Macho Nacho makes some good walkthroughs. Tito make some high quality videos, and I think he actually did a little bit of work for HHL as well. But
yeah, and he covers a lot of stuff, very broad too, you know, everything from like OG Xbox, you know, whatever the latest kind of little handheld is, like switchy stuff and things like that. Yeah,
and he still delves into like projects for beginners and makes them very cogent and
for sure
very simple. So every once in a while I'll find myself cheating a little bit. I was going back to a mod that I hadn't done in a long time. I think I saw his version pop up on YouTube and clicked on it first before I went back to my own channel. take that how you will. But yeah, he seems to be a good dude. I haven't met him personally, but he's got a lot of followers because apparently he's a fairly pleasant guy too. But I haven't dealt with him a lot personally. I don't know. I looked back through the people that you've interviewed for your channel, and I felt somewhat flattered because there's a lot of like real innovators that you've talked to on there. Like, Retro RGB, like Bob from
Bob's
there.
Awesome. And, Bob's a powerhouse.
Yeah. And then, Matt's mods. I'll drop in on one of his posts every once in a while and you know, make a joke. He's just a good dude.
He is.
And again, just a really positive presence on the
absolutely
scene.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the Nelly the Nerd episode as well. Just her talking about sort of how she got started out and you know what it takes to actually go through and do this stuff.
I don't hear much from Matt. I don't see or hear much from Nat these days because I'm not at that level of, like, wherever Nat's hanging out, it's like, well, away. Yeah. All I know is every now and then I see a beautiful build and it's like, what's special about this? Yeah. Oh, it's got some of Nat's gear in it. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And that's the thing. She's doing, like, making real steps in the industry. And that's really cool. I really just own one of her products and that's the extent of it. But, yeah, another guy that has really been... I'd say a force in the community is a dude named Sean Maxwell. I don't think I'm wrong. I think he's an actual electrical engineer. And in the past when I was like doing projects, like one of my most popular videos on my channel, which again, fairly humble, is how to walk through and install a lithium polymer battery and USB-C charger in a pocket. It took care of a lot of the weird power issues that the pockets have because of their, you know, they have a slightly different power structure than the DMG and the Game Boy Color after it. And they're a lot touchier. But early on, I found that, you know, funny playing screens on a flash drive or a flash cart just did not work together. And even the funny playing screen was pretty inconsistent with AAA batteries.
Yep.
So you'd either have to use a funny playing screen with 1.5 volt regular AAAs and just burn through those suckers like crazy. If you try to use rechargeables, which are pretty much invariably 1.2 volts, it would be really inconsistent and sometimes it turns on, sometimes it doesn't. And so the solution to a lot of that was just find yourself a good lithium polymer battery, wire it up simply. It works pretty much the same way as doing with the Game Boy Color. And then it's just getting like simple 3.7 volt power from that battery direct. From that day on, I was able to use the EverDrive in a pocket with a high-end IPS screen without A, draining the battery in minutes, and B, without really having any power differential issues. So
awesome.
And now part of the reason that worked is because I was actually running some of those things past Sean Maxwell in the background. He didn't know me from Adam at all. But a couple of mutual people, they were like, I think this is the guy to ask. And I was like, hi, you don't know me. But, and so, you know, one of the only actual innovations that I can claim on my channel, like that people hadn't really done and that nobody had really made a video for, I can directly attribute to him taking the time and energy to actually like explain some of this theory to me. And then me going back and trying to put it into practice. So,
cool.
There was a lot of trial and error, but it worked out nicely. And I think a lot of people have actually used that video as a base for their own builds. Because, awesome. Before that, not a lot of people were trying to, A, use those screens because the funny plate screens had only come up pretty recently. And then also pairing them up with the flash cards just hadn't really gotten a lot of play in the scene. So,
Yep. Awesome, man. Well, you've definitely rubbed shoulders with some, you know, you're pretty open and pretty modest honest from the beginning. Like, I'm just a short person in the world of very tall people when it comes to the tech. And that's clearly the case. You've confirmed that several times, but it's sometimes we need the kind of the middle guy to sort of translate. And, you know, like I think I got through all the conversation I can have with someone like Nat the Nerd when she was on, because if I had let her kept talking, I just would have glazed over and just felt so stupid. So
did delve into the tech end a bit. Yeah.
We do need these people like yourself to sort of take a lot of this sort of, you know, fringy stuff, which becomes mainstream, but sort of translate into, well, what's in this for me? Because I don't understand what the hell that person's talking about. I like when you're talking about Tito, you know, and I think that's kind of part of this podcast was not so much about how to do stuff, but why to do stuff. And, you know, people like yourself feel that other little slot of, yeah, that's really great. This makes Rocket go now, but let's just make it go sort of thing. And there's no doubt that's appreciated for your style of videos and your style of information. No worries. All right, buddy. Well, look, if you've had enough and everything, and I'll let you go there. I really do appreciate you coming and hanging out, and we've been sort of chatting backwards and forwards, and I'm sure we'll chat some more, hey, as time goes on.
Well, this is a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on. It's I don't know anybody else. I don't really have a lot of people in my immediate community that are really into this particular thing.
So yeah,
being able to chat with somebody about it at length,
for sure. Another human
generally knows what I'm talking about.
yeah, I know.
A lot of people, they're like Game Boys, and they kind of look at me quizzically, and I'm like, yeah, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, I get someone who's like, oh man, that sounds amazing. I've been looking for a way to figure out like how to get my old Game Boy running. I'm like, just call me. So
yeah.
But yeah, being able to just chat about it at length and broadly with someone who, yeah, you've got a general knowledge of the niche.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Well, thank
it's
you
been
so
a pleasure.
Much. Yeah. Likewise. Really great to meet you. And anybody that's out there listening right now that isn't already following Jared, Primetime Funk Mods. And the list of people that I've just mentioned, you know, these are all contributors to a community. It's just there's no political parties. There's no kind of all the other stuff that puts people into tribes or anything like that. It's just how to have fun with Game Boys and retro gaming. And let's just keep up that, because it's a good place to go when everything else is just too much work, you know. So thanks for your time, Jared. And like I said, I've been following you for a while. I'll keep following you. And surely a few people that don't know you will follow you now and, you know, follow your lead on just trying to keep it nice and simple and fun for those that are trying to do their own thing. So thank you, buddy. You enjoy the rest of your Saturday night and the rest of your weekend, hey?
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. Cheers.
All right, buddy. I'll catch up with you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.